Hello, listener. I'm Carl Anker, and welcome to Talk of the Devils, the Manchester United podcast from The Athletic. Laurie Whitwell is on a well-earned holiday, but as usual, I'm joined by United We Stand editor and contributing writer to The Athletic, Mr. Andy Mitten. Andy, how are you?
I'm all good, Carl. I hope you are too. I know it's been a long, long day with you being at Old Trafford, but we've seen a win, haven't we? So maybe there'll be a bit more optimism in tonight's conversation.
Yeah, two wins back-to-back at Old Trafford. Who'd have thunk it? I do this every week now, and I've also had someone comment that I have to do this week. So, where in the world is Andy Mitten?
I'm in Barcelona, and I'm here for a while because, well, I don't know how long I'm going to be here because of various travel restrictions, but hopefully some will be lifted, but I'm pretty unsure of the situation at the moment, so I think it's... I'm one of many millions of billions of people who have been restricted by Corona at the moment. I'm actually just looking at the moment about going to Leipzig in a couple of weeks for the game. But I'm in about five different minds about whether I should do it or not. Not least because it's my eldest daughter's birthday, and I promised her that I would be there for a birthday this year.
I'll let you know, every single United game is currently covered up until the 15th. Or perhaps the 19th between Laurie and myself, apart from the game against Leipzig. So I guess we'll flip a can of Red Bull to see who's going to do that trip. Let's get into today's podcast business. We reflect on the Manchester United's, I want to put, if hopefully you can hear the air comments here, impressive win over Istanbul Başakşehir here. United are now in pole position in the group with 9 points. Only one more to qualify from a Champions League group that many thought they wouldn't end up qualifying from. So that's all good. We're going to discuss that. We're also going to discuss the victory over West Bromwich Albion. That was less impressive. And we're going to look forward to Sunday, where Manchester United play Southampton in what has been termed as the Luke Shaw derby by some, and by some other people as the... No, I'm not going to say it. That derby. Before we get started, listener, remember, The Athletic has some of the best Manchester United writing you can find in English language and in some other languages as well, because Andy speaks Spanish and knows a bit of Portuguese as well. He's well clever. To celebrate, we're going to give you the chance to subscribe to The Athletic for our best ever price. It's just £1 a month for the next 12 months, and you can cancel at any point in time. That's access to all of The Athletic all year long, including our podcast ad-free. We're going to bring you unrivaled coverage of Manchester United for an unbeatable price, and we're not going to be running a better deal at any time soon. The offer runs from Black Friday, so that's this Friday, for just 1 week up until the 4th of December, so don't miss out. Remember, this is The Athletic, covering Manchester United past, present and future. Andy has just written an excellent piece on Manchester United's under-18s. Laurie has, by the time you listen to this, will have a fantastic piece out on Matt Judge. And I'm going to do some tinkering on a question I asked about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, about what he intends for Manchester United in the long-term future. So, to take advantage of this deal, go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. That's theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod, and pay just £1 a month for the next 12 months. This offer is for new subscribers only. Now then, Manchester United 4, Istanbul Başakşehir here 1. Seems pretty simple, but it was a little bit tricky. Andy, you watched this game on TV. What did you see?
I saw Manchester United start incredibly well. In truth, I didn't know what to expect. I don't think you do with United these days, especially at Old Trafford, but there is some consistency coming in the Champions League games at Old Trafford after that RB win a few weeks ago. And then a 4-1 win in any Champions League game, you've got to be happy with that. And that's something that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said after the match. But United started really, really well, especially the attackers, in a very attack-minded team. I thought Cavani did well. I thought Van der Beek did well. Bruno Fernandes was an absolute star. Rashford and Martial started the game well. And while the attack faded a little bit in the second half, and you rightly pointed out, it was a little bit nervy towards the end, Bruno's opening strike was fantastic. And I would have taken 9 points after at this stage from this group all day long when that group was announced. Mm-hmm. I know everyone keeps saying only one more point needed to go through. I'm not as convinced as some people, because PSG at home is a game United could easily lose, and the RB game away is a game United could easily lose. So I've been really encouraged by the form in the Champions League, apart from that horror result in Istanbul a few weeks ago. But there's still some serious work needs to be done. And if United can get through this group, then I think you've got to credit the manager, because it's been a really tough group.
It really was. I did not expect 9 points, especially in this manner. I thought perhaps they'd nick a draw against one of RB or against PSG, and I expected them to beat Istanbul both times. I think I wrote a piece on The Athletic saying United would go to the final day of the Champions League group and it wouldn't be in their hands. But it looks like they're in control. And they were really good for 25 minutes against Istanbul. Having Edison Cavani there, I think it was quite funny. I'm not sure if anyone saw it on television. But he basically was holding Martin Skrtel's hand for 25 minutes. He was constantly on him, constantly hounding him. And then when that didn't quite work, he moved on to the other centre-back. And any time Alex Telles got onto the ball in the final third, Cavani would dart towards the near post looking for that sort of cross. So you saw it for that second goal that Bruno got, where the cross came in and it came just a little bit over Cavani's head, but Bruno was behind and just sort of stabbed it in afterwards. I believe, if I get the numbers right properly on my special spreadsheet, Alex Telles attempted something like 11 crosses in the first 20 minutes. So that's something new that is coming to Manchester United. I did ask Ole Gunnar Solskjaer what he thought of the team's approach when he had Donny van de Beek in the pivot and he also had Cavani. And he did mention Cavani allows them to play in this different style and it allows them to get more crosses in. Andy, do you think crosses, sort of one of the more old school forms of attack, is the way for United to start playing better football?
Yeah, there shouldn't be an over-reliance on them. Like David Moyes' side against Fulham when United put in 247 crosses in the first 8 minutes and it didn't really work out. But you're quite right. Alex Telles in Paris, it took a little bit of time to get into the game, but he hit some beautiful crosses. And again tonight at Old Trafford, as you say, that corner where I'm set up one of the goals and Cavani's movement, you're totally right there, because that freed up Bruno for a pretty simple tap-in. So I think it's been a good week for Telles and also for Cavani. I'd like to see both of them feature more. I've spoke a lot positively about Cavani, and that's because everybody I speak to speaks so well of how good he still is. And he didn't score tonight, but some of his link-up play with Bruno was fantastic. His movement, his composure. And I sense with him, he's just waiting to explode and start scoring all those goals that he's scored wherever he's been throughout his career. It's great that Telles is an option, because Luke Shaw, who was really good until he got injured, he does get injured. And United were really hampered early on last season by injuries. And all Ole Gunnar's been looking to do is build, have competition in every single position, two players in every single competition. If you look at United's great teams, they're actually great squads.
Yep.
And I don't think there's a truly great squad there at United. We've seen parts of United's positioning now where there's really good competition. Henderson could have easily played tonight. Telles is the example that I just gave. The midfield, which has been a worry, do you not think, in recent weeks? I thought Van de Beek had a great night. I thought he linked brilliantly with Fernandes playing in that six, and he moved further forward, and he probably did better out of the game against Istanbul than any other player on the pitch. So loads more reasons for encouragement, and I think the way that United tailed off towards the end is probably shows where Manchester United are at the moment. That said, I thought Greenwood did well when he came on. Dan James got a goal, which is important. Axel got booked, so that means he can't play against PSG, which is unfortunate. But I thought Ollie used his subs well, and even bringing on Matic the last 10 minutes as Istanbul had a couple of decent chances was probably a wise substitution to make. The games are coming thick and fast, are coming all the time, and he's got to make best use of the squad.
I really enjoyed the Manu Matic substitution, where sort of the triple substitution didn't quite work for me. You could definitely see United lost some structure when Bruno Fernandes went out. As I wrote after the game against West Brom, one of the real problems for United is Bruno is the main risk taker. So when you take Bruno out, with Pogba especially injured and or in the wind, there's a real problem on players who can make the difficult passes. Fred is getting better and he's trying. There was a particular moment, according to my notes, that he made in the 37th minute, and my notes just read, "Oh, Fred," where he sort of gets the ball and tries to hook it out to the right-hand side and it gets cut out. And he's getting better and he's going to get there. I think what's really interesting now is he's working in as a sort of like a hovering defensive midfield player. So as long as he's not the fixed point the fixed deepest midfielder. He can sort of run around the place and sneak up on a lot of players and nick the ball. And he's getting better at making those initial passes to players. And if you give better, smarter players around him, Fred doesn't have to worry about making line-breaking passes because he can. Other players will do that for him. So, for example, Donny van der Beek playing next to Fred reduces the need on Fred to make the line-breaking passes. Because Donny, unlike, let's say, Juan Mata, who needs a little bit more time and space, shows great awareness. If you look at that fourth goal, that was a really good example of what van der Beek and Cavani can add in. So Cavani sort of drops off the halfway line when he sees Matic is on the ball, drops off, takes the ball, like one touch, gives it to Donny, and then Donny immediately sweeps it out to the right-hand side. So Greenwood's on his bike. United is still going to be a counter-attacking team for the most part, but there are options, or the seeds of options, and I think that's quite interesting.
I'm with you on almost everything you said there. Donny's one touch, and you use the word one touch, his link up there with Bruno and Cavani right down the middle. I thought that was really effective. Fred, as soon as you started to make the point, I knew what you were going to say. he made two absolute stinkers in the first half, and he still got that in him. And one thing I miss is I would have spoke to him after that game tonight in normal circumstances, mm-hmm. and got a bit more depth and hopefully would have been quite positive, because I think he's had a decent game. And I think he's been playing pretty well. He was poor against Arsenal, I think. But aside from that, he's not doing so badly. And after a really bad first season, I think he is more confident. And confidence was always a big issue for him, because he would train well and then he'd go into a game and he'd give the ball away and his head would drop down a bit. But he's become an established player for Manchester United. And Donny's the one I think who can take the most from the game against Istanbul. I think United were vengeful after that against Istanbul, mm-hmm. following that pretty horrendous defeat in Turkey. And there's been three wins now, Carl, since that game. Everton, West Brom, which was a struggle, but Everton wasn't a struggle and Istanbul wasn't a struggle either. You know, there's seven goals been scored in those two games. They got the 3 points against West Brom, which it was ugly, but it was 3 points and it was much needed. And the league table still doesn't make pretty reading, but the mood has definitely lifted. And like for like, United are actually 2 points ahead at the same stage compared to last season. Last season was a horrendous start to the season. Mm-hmm. But United need to continue the winning run. I've got a little bit of optimism because the next couple of games in the league are away from home, and United do really well away from home. But they've got to keep getting it right at Old Trafford. But two wins in 4 days at Old Trafford, I would have had that all day long if we would have spoke about that a week ago.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ollie said something quite interesting to MUTV before the game against West Brom, where he doesn't really believe in home games or away games anymore. He said it's something like they're just games because there's no crowd. He seems like he doesn't quite enjoy the lack of emotional connection that you get from games without the crowds there, something you've touched upon recently.
He's totally right. Old Trafford would not have accepted those performances against Arsenal and Chelsea in particular. Mm-hmm. Tottenham was a freak one. You're going to get results like that once every 5 years or whatever. But the pedestrian pace in which those games were played, the fans would just not have accepted it. No mm-hmm. way. I've been going to that stadium for most of my life and they just wouldn't have accepted it. And I'm not saying that the fans can impact 100% on a game, but they can certainly have 10%. It depends who you talk to. I spoke to Paul Scholes a couple of weeks ago and he said at the Salford City level he was talking about doesn't really affect the games, but in my opinion it absolutely affects the games. And even away matches, Southampton away is one of the most boisterous away matches. United fans get a really nice chunk of St Mary's, 3,500 people. It's located right close to the city centre. There are pubs close to the stadium. Plenty of those away fans take advantage of those public houses in normal circumstances. They get into the away nice and refreshed and they're really boisterous. And that has obviously all gone. So Ollie's totally got a point. There must be a reason why United have been so bad at home when previously United have been so good at home. And we're seeing freak results all over. And look at the league tables all over. I've mentioned Barcelona a few times. They're 10th in La Liga. But in the Champions League, they're absolutely fantastic. And look where Manchester City are in the league. Look where Arsenal are in the league. The home and away advantage is definitely been eroded.
Which makes news from the British government that fans might be allowed back into stadiums.
Mm.
Potentially interesting. So news came out, I want to say, yesterday. So by the time you get this listening, it'll be Wednesday. So on Monday, news came out that crowds up to 4,000 people will be allowed into outdoor events depending on lockdown. So Manchester was in tier 3 before national lockdown was put in place, which would make Old Trafford unlikely to allow up to 4,000. So I believe the ruling is 4,000 if you're in tier 1, up to about 2,000 if you're in tier 2, and then if you're in tier 3, unfortunately, no luck. It will be remains to see. I think we will find out on Thursday in the afternoon UK time. Boris Johnson is particularly tardy with his announcement, so who knows. But on the Thursday, he will announce what area is in what. And if Manchester manages to be in tier 2, COVID rates have been falling, so fingers crossed. There is a slim chance, I'm not going to say a good chance, there is a slim chance that the Manchester Derby on December 15th could have crowds in. Andy, I've never been witness to a Manchester Derby before in a stadium. What's it like?
Hit and miss, if I'm honest. And I've written a book about Derby games, and compared to some of the best in the world, the Manchester one is hit and miss. So if we're going to talk about the last one, the last game at Old Trafford in front of a crowd, definitely hit. If you're going to talk about the away games recently, where United have done particularly well, and you're in that away end, it's absolutely brilliant. You've got 3,000 away fans, you've got City fans screaming at you from all sides, and it's great. But a lot of them are miss. You're quite right to talk about the falling rates. Old Trafford's in Trafford, that's the borough, and the rates in Trafford are among the lowest in Greater Manchester, and they've fallen quite significantly. There's so many factors, and we've had a few false starts here. The authorities have got to consider how the fans get to the stadium, thousands of fans on using public transport, using the Metrolink, for example. But I was at that game in Turkey a few weeks ago, and that's been the only game this season where there has been fans, and we're talking 300, and it made a huge difference. It made a huge difference. There was one away fan, Barmy Kef, and obviously he couldn't say anything and he shouldn't have even been in there, but it does make a difference. And if there are 4,000 in that side Old Trafford, I know that throws up all sorts of complications as to who gets those tickets, and people are definitely going to be unhappy about that, but it would bring an atmosphere, and at the moment there isn't an atmosphere. 4,000 people could make a real din. I was looking forward to fans coming back in October. We even printed copies of United We Stand in anticipation of that, and I wrote the story in The Athletic because I got a little tip off about it. But even as I was writing it, the chance of that happening was decreasing by the day because the COVID rates were going up so much. So it would be absolutely brilliant if we see fans inside Old Trafford, if it's deemed to be safe, this calendar year, because it's something I wasn't expecting. And I know there are a lot of United fans have just written off this season. They miss going to the matches. It's not just the football, it's the occasion. It's meeting your friends before the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's going and shouting, and people love going to football matches in their absolute millions, but you will get to enjoy it, Carl. I don't know when normality is going to be resumed, because nobody does, but go to the derby at home and away. There's been some pretty rough moments in the last decade against City, because City have obviously had a very good team, and City's record at Old Trafford has been brilliant up until when Scott McTominay got that second and United won in March. But yeah, when it's bouncing, when Marcus Rashford, a Manchester lad, scores the only goal away in a Manchester derby, and you come out the ground and City fans are absolutely floored, and like me, like me, you get on a plane the next morning to Barcelona and you see two of City's leading executives, because City are full of Catalans, and you walk past them and say, Rashford's absolutely brilliant, to your imaginary mate who's not even on the plane, just so they can hear you and look round at you. And I feel like you look round all you like. I'm allowed to say that. What are you going to do about it? He is brilliant and he's just scored a great goal. Next question.
It's Southampton on Sunday. This is my expertise. This will be quite difficult. Paul Pogba's currently injured with an ankle injury, so I'm not going to talk about him because he hasn't had a great record against Southampton. What I will say is, if everyone is fit, and that's a big if, because Victor Lindelof went off at halftime. I think he's back twinged. Aaron Wan-Bissaka went off in around about the 60th minute because he felt something. And other reasons. But if everyone is fit, I take the same starting lineup again. What about you, Andy?
Yeah, I would. As you say, Aaron went off. I think it was an ankle issue, and Victor's had back issues. And I'd like to ask you about Southampton, because I know that you covered them professionally last year. That was the first time I met you, was at the game last year. That was a pretty disappointing 1-1 draw at St Mary's. It seems so long ago, that. But if United win, they'll only go level with Southampton. Southampton have topped the table recently. What are Southampton doing right? Or what's the manager doing right? Because I was at the game at Old Trafford during lockdown and they were a cracking side.
They are incredibly well coached by Ralph Hasenhüttl. He very much believes in this high-pressing 4-2-2-2 system. And they've got... You know how Manchester United used to constantly have problems with Wolves? Because Wolves would just set a trap in central midfield, and the moment one of those central midfield players would get there, the Wolves players just shoot up and nick the ball off him. Southampton are a bit good at that. So if you remember the 2-2 draw against Southampton behind closed doors at the end of last season, the first goal Southampton scored, it came, the ball, you know, they worked the ball around and Pogba got on it. And the moment that happened, Romeo and Ward-Prowse just sprung up on him and nicked the ball, which is why I'm sort of not too sad if Pogba doesn't start. United will need to be ambitious, especially in that central midfield area, because that's where the battle is for Southampton. Southampton now are also getting quite good in build-up play, so they will be quite patient in their attacks, and they're getting good at what's, I think the term is basically second phases or second waves in the penalty area. So when the cross comes in, not only do you have your initial striker, but you have the person just behind them, so there are two places to aim. United will need to be wise to that. Big ask for Harry Maguire, but I think the impetus will be on Manchester United to win this one. There should be enough firepower from this United team. Their tails seem a little bit up. Something I found quite interesting from Solskjaer before this game against Istanbul is he talked about how his plans often change depending on who scores the first goal. It wasn't quite Mike Tyson's quote about everyone has a plan until they get socked in the mouth, but it wasn't far off. How do you think Manchester United are in terms of defending, Andy?
It's a good question, because I don't think United defended particularly well against Istanbul, who created, I think, 15 chances. Okay, most of them were not on target. But it remains an issue. I think Telles had a decent game. Maguire and Lindelof have both recovered from poor starts to the season. You've spoken a lot and very well about Aaron Wan-Bissaka. I think everyone agrees defensively is fantastic. The doubts come in when you talk about his attacking play. Luke Shaw has done well. I think De Gea is having a good season. There were major doubts about him at the start of this season. I don't think it's become a major priority area that it might have been if we were speaking after two or three matches. I think Maguire is good.
Mm-hmm.
Not great, and maybe you need to be great for Manchester United, because Vidic and Ferdinand were great centrally. I think there's a slight issue with the defenders United have got who don't play. Marcus Rojo, Phil Jones. What is the future for Brandon Williams? I said last week that I wasn't as certain of it as I would have been 6 months ago, and I stand by that. Does that mean that Brandon plays more on the right-hand side as cover for Aaron Wan-Bissaka? So the goals which have given United a pretty horrendous goal difference still, they've stopped being leaked.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be interested to see how that defence does against PSG, because they battered United last time they came to Old Trafford. And even Southampton last year, it was a really interesting game. at St Mary's. It was early on in the season. It was in the August. United were brilliant. Very good in the first half. Juan Mata was really good at finding spaces. And I think he set up Dan James for a goal.
Mm-hmm.
But in the second half, United's defence was really under pressure. And Southampton deserved their equaliser. And it seemed like a fair 1-1 draw, and it was a really disappointing result for Manchester United. And I think a draw would be disappointing this weekend as well, because United should be winning and need to be getting back up the table. That said, when Southampton came to Old Trafford, they put a lot of pressure on that defence. United's defending was pretty ropey that night. You mentioned Oriol Romeo, the Catalan. I mean, he was pretty aggressive that night. He was a bit too aggressive. I think there's a few United fans wouldn't mind catching up with him and having a few words with him about that. But Southampton have been a success story for the last decade. If you wind back a decade, Southampton went into the third tier. And then they came through. Adkins was a good manager. Pochettino was a really, really good manager for them. And I remember a key game at Old Trafford. It doesn't seem key, but David Moyes had just taken over. Southampton came. Luke Shaw was very good. Victor Wanyama was very good. Morgan Schneidlin was very good. Look at all those players Southampton have had. Imagine if they kept on Sadio Mane, Virgil van Dijk, Tadic, the captain of Ajax. They'd be a top four side. So Southampton has been a big, big success story. They moved to the ground. It holds 32,000. It's full most weeks. I can remember going to the Dell when it held 15,000. It was nowhere near fit for purpose for Premier League football. So it's going to be a tough one. It really is. Look at Southampton have won 5 of their 8 matches and only lost one, if I'm not mistaken.
It's going to be fun. And it's going to be on a Sunday as well, which will be quite interesting. We will one day eventually get into how do Manchester United deal with sleep patterns, because we've just had 2 nighttime games and now they're going to go into a 2 o'clock game on the Sunday. And Ollie has complained about the 12 o'clock kickoff they had against Everton, which was a game that Ollie has brought up 2 or 3 times in his press conferences now.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let's talk about some of the current articles we have on the website. On Tuesday, Andy, you had a great little chat with the under-18s coach, Neil Ryan.
Neil's an interesting lad. He's the son of Jimmy Ryan, the former assistant manager to Sir Alex Ferguson. And Neil played as a professional. His career didn't work out as he'd hoped. He was at Luton, then he went to America. Played under legendary United goal scorer Dennis Violet, who's, along with George Best, 5th in the all-time United top scorers chart. And then he came back to Manchester. He played at Altrincham. My brother played at Altrincham. Colin Little, who's Neil's assistant, is a legendary non-league striker. He was also at Altrincham. And Neil started out coaching at United for free. Then he got a part-time role. And his first age group was when Jesse Lingard was 11 years old. And he's worked hard, he's got a good reputation, he's seen as being diligent, and he's been promoted to being the youth coach. And I spoke to him 3 times and just built up the interview in different layers just to see how his mind was working. And including, you know, straight after the youth semi-final defeat to Chelsea, I got a couple of messages from him and then asked him the same questions like 10 days later. And I think we should be doing that type of journalism, Carl. You know, I've seen pieces that you've done where you wouldn't see them anywhere else. So Neil's never going to be front page news. He doesn't want to be front page news. He says if you're a coach, you're in the shadows. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't be speaking to these type of people and telling their story. Because this is the man who's coached players like Marcus Rashford when Marcus Rashford decided he wanted to be a midfielder. And Neil said, no, you're a forward. and it's fascinating because because of his dad who played at United as well, he's well versed in the history of the club. But he admitted he had massive blanks in his mind because everyone said, oh, your dad was this, your dad was that. But he was growing up in America and in Luton, and there was no internet and there was no games on TV. And he didn't really know what Manchester United meant until Dennis Violet picked him up from an airport in Washington and drove him for 6 hours and said, listen, I was in the Munich air crash. This is what happened. And Neil just said, I didn't speak for 6 hours. And I found that fascinating.
It is a fascinating interview. I would heartily recommend it to everyone. It's one of those great timeless pieces. And you also get a great look at how the academy is working after, I think it's fair to say, a couple of seasons of drift. Is that right, Andy? The academy was, and now it's hello.
Yeah, I think that's right. The bottom line is not enough money was put into the academy, and Manchester City and Chelsea were investing far more than Manchester United. And by 2015, United had fallen way behind. And I wrote a piece, I remember writing it, because I had concerned people within the club coming to me and telling me. And I thought when I wrote it, I'm going to get a lot of abuse for this when I went on a pre-season tour. And what I actually found was some pretty big, well-known people coming up to me, looking left, looking right, making sure no one was looking and saying, thanks for writing that, it was needed. And I'm told that investment has increased fourfold since 2015. Loads of players have been brought in from some of the biggest clubs in the world, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, from South America. So I've got a lot of optimism about the youth system. And I know we were both at the semi-final a few weeks ago. That was a pretty bad night, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of good signs in the youth system.
Things are on the up. Another article you can currently read on The Athletic is from myself on Manchester United's left-backs. So I've taken a statistical deep dive on Luke Shaw, Alex Telles and Brandon Williams, looking at what they're good at, looking at what they're not so good at, trying to apply a little bit of the eye test context as well. And I basically found Luke Shaw an absolute fascinating player. Andy, if I told you Luke Shaw was 6'1", would you believe me?
No, I wouldn't. And I'm looking forward to reading this piece, but no, I wouldn't. And so, if I told you that Marcus Rojo is above 6 foot, I wouldn't have believed that either, but I've stood next to him. He's massive. I just don't think he is. But Luke Shaw, no. If you told me Luke Shaw was 5'6", I'd say that's more probable than Luke Shaw being 6'1". But now you've told me, no, you're right.
Yeah. I thought it was 5'7". Looked at it, turned out he was 6'1". He's also in his fifth season at Manchester United. And he is good and very important to Manchester United's build-up, especially on the left-hand side. You can find all of that and some more on the Athletic page. We also have a piece from Laurie that not only... We have one piece from Laurie that not only looks at the Paul Pogba situation and his contract and sort of his changing influence on the Manchester United team, but we have a piece coming up very soon on Matt Judge, essentially going, who is Matt Judge? What is he good at? And what does he do at Manchester United? That I think you will find fascinating. I've caught glimpses on early draft and I'm very intrigued to see it when the full product comes out. Remember, listener, new subscribers can get a subscription to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the next 12 months by going to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. It's the best coverage of Manchester United in English language. Well, that's what we strive to do every single week. But other than that, Andy, it's nearly midnight in the UK, so I think it's closing time. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Carl. It's been nice to talk to you. It'd be nice to get Laurie back as well next week, and it would be nice to be talking after a couple more, one or two Manchester United wins. But I was encouraged by the 4 goals against Istanbul. It was much needed.
It's looking good. Laurie will be back sometime next week, and we will most likely record another episode of Talk of the Devils after the Paris Saint-Germain game. I'm raising my eyebrows as I say that, waiting for producer Eddie to be in my ear. He said, yeah, let's do it. So let's do it. We'll be back sometime after the PSG game on the 5th. I want to say the 5th. The 5th? Maybe the 2nd. I don't know my dates anymore.
2nd. It's the 2nd. I think Luke Shaw's in his 7th season at Old Trafford, bizarrely.
7 seasons at Old Trafford. And I'm going to say it now. He was the longest reigning holder of the Sir Matt Busby Player of the Year Award because of COVID. So yeah, Luke Shaw, very very interesting player on paper. Please enjoy that piece, and please enjoy Andy's piece, and please enjoy more episodes of Talk of the Devils. We'll see you sometime next week. Goodbye.